And the backlash against them from the Saudis and the other Sunni powers is going to be that much greater.
An attack blamed on Al-Shabaab at the Garissa University College in Kenya on Thursday has left 150 people dead. 80 more were wounded. The four gunmen who attacked the college were killed by security forces. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta appeared on television as the attack was taking place.
On my own behalf, on behalf of my government, I extend condolences to the families of those who have perished in this attack. We continue to pray for the quick recovery of the injured and the safe rescue of those still being held hostage.
Al-Shabaab has pledged to punish Kenya for contributing troops to an African Union force fighting the militants in Somalia. A second data black box has been retrieved from the German wing's crash site in the French Alps. It's hoped the black box will provide more clues to the crash, as the head of the investigation explained.
Son état général.
Based on the condition the black box is in, we're hopeful that we'll indeed be able to read out the data that it's collected. The flight recorder collects data on around 500 different parameters, including the aircraft's speed, its altitude, and engine conditions.
La vitesse de l'avion, l'altitude de l'avion.
It also records the pilot's actions and the aircraft's various control mechanisms.
Sur les commandes et les différents modes de pilotage de l'avion.
You're listening to Deutsche Welle News. Shortly after lifting martial law, Thailand's junta has granted itself sweeping powers by invoking a constitutional provision. Rights organizations have criticized the new powers as being even more draconian than martial law. The new order includes a continuance of a ban on political gatherings of more than five people. The military also retains the right to arrest, detain, and prosecute people for national security crimes or for commenting on the country's royal family. The seven contenders for Prime Minister in the forthcoming British elections presented their cases on television on Thursday night. It's the only time before the May election that Prime Minister David Cameron and all six others appear together. The vote set for May the 7th is expected to be a close-run battle. Foreign policy was largely absent in the debate. There was an extended discussion on immigration. None of the leaders or questions addressed issues such as the self-styled Islamic State, Russia, or the future of the European Union. Ahead of celebrations for Easter in Rome, Pope Francis presided at a Holy Thursday ceremony where he washed and kissed the feet of 12 men and women in a Rome prison housing many hardened criminals. For the third consecutive year, Francis did not hold the traditional service in a basilica. Instead, he went to people on the margins of society and included women. In Germany, the Christian Democratic Union Party unveiled a poster honoring former German Chancellor Helmut Kohl on Thursday at his 85th birthday. The acting head of the CDU in Kohl's native state, Julia Klöckner, praised the former chancellor as a man of world history at the unveiling on the outside wall of the party headquarters in Mainz. Kohl turns 85 on Friday. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.de. Shane McIntosh, Deutsche Welle News.
Deine Hoffnung ist, was du bist. Du bist Liebe, bist Hoffnung, bist Kraft. Du gibst Liebe, gibst Freude, gibst Macht. Vergiss nicht, wer du bist, vergiss nicht, was du machst. Vergiss nicht, wer du bist, doch vergiss, was du hast. Du willst die Herrschaft, doch vergiss nicht die Schwerkraft. Es fühlt sich gut an, wenn du Macht hast. Doch gib Acht, was die Macht mit dir macht.
Deutsche Welle. Learn German anywhere in the world. dwworld.de.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Deutsche Welle. attempts to forget. Musik ist unser Gott und kann uns alle retten. Alles, was zählt, ist der Wille zur Bewegung. Wir feiern den Moment und die Chance der Begegnung. Da kommt die Hi-Hat, die Kickdrum, die Snare und der Bass. Die Gitarre, die Stimme, gib nur das. Und das ist alles, was du hast. Die Hi-Hat, die Kickdrum, die Snare und der Bass. Deine Stimme, die Gitarre, es gibt nur das. Und das ist alles, was du brauchst.
Worldwide. Oh, it's dreaming your life while you walk down the coast.
in the world. dwworld.de.
I'm sick of wasting hours at the backstage of the bar. But I'm spending all my afternoons in pink and stinky cars. But I'm coming home, I'm coming home today. I'm sick of being addicted.
Thank you.
Deutsche Welle.
Living Planet. Hello and welcome to Living Planet, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. I'm Sarah Steffen. Coming up in the next half hour, a special on shrinking habitats and the devastating effects on man and the environment. We'll hear about spaces dwindling for tigers in the Sundarbans, the vast mangrove forest shared by India and Bangladesh.
When human beings going inside the forest for fishing, for honey collection, for wood cutting, sometimes someone attacks the human beings and kills the human beings.
The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo wants to shift the boundaries of its national park to make way for oil extraction.
It is the government that created the national parks in the first place. If the government is later satisfied that conservation and oil extraction can go together, what's the problem?
And wild boars roam the streets in Istanbul.
They're usually the younger males that are trying to find new territories for themselves. Because the habitat is fragmented, they actually have smaller places to go to, and then they end up in the cities.
The Sundarbans mangrove forest, spreading across parts of Bangladesh and the Indian state of West Bengal, is one of the largest reserves for the Bengal tiger. But rising sea levels and coastal erosion are destroying the tiger's natural habitat. More and more tigers prowl into villages in search for food. Just last week, a tiger reportedly killed a villager on the Bangladeshi side of the mangrove forest. Murali Krishnan visited the Sundarbans and sent us this report.
Pratima Rai, 27, is here to come to terms with the aftermath of Cyclone Ayla that struck the Sundarbans almost 6 years ago. A mother of two, the strapping woman, struggles with log salt water that has rendered her fertile farming land less than a hectare unusable. Sonargaon village was one of the places that had been hit the worst. Pratima's husband died in the cyclone. A couple of years ago, many families from Sonargaon village migrated to Kolkata, the capital of the Indian state of West Bengal. Many fields in the Sundarbans region are still not fit for cultivation. Rising sea level and increasing salinity have deprived the people in the core Sundarban areas of their main sources of livelihood, agriculture and fishing. Because of this loss of livelihood, many families like Pratima's have had to turn to fishing or wild honey gathering in the forest reserve, exposing themselves to becoming prey for the sanctuary's booming tiger population. Although it's illegal, many go into protected areas. The Sundarbans is a UN World Heritage Site where it's forbidden to cut firewood and poach animals. And it's where people like Pratima risk running into tigers.
Sometimes tigers come to the village. We try to stay indoors. Obviously, we get scared. But we have to deal with the situation. What do we do? There is no way out.
It's night time in Sonargaon village. Someone has spotted a stray tiger, but no one knows where it is. But the loud roar of the Bengal tiger shows it's not too far away. The villagers are alert, but the night, fortunately, passes off peacefully. As human populations expand and natural habitats shrink, people and animal are increasingly coming into conflict over living space and food. People lose their livestock and sometimes their lives. High tides, which are a regular feature in the area, wash away the tiger's urine and scat, which serve as territorial markers. In such a situation, the only way left is to defend the territory by physically dominating everything that enters the tiger's habitat. Anil Mistry, who used to be a poacher and is now an ardent conservationist in the Sundarbans, explains.
When human beings going inside the forest for fishing, for honey collection, for wood cutting, then sometimes tiger attack the human beings and kill the human beings. Actually, men who are going inside the forest, they are only trying to earn in a short period. And that's why they are taking risks and tiger attack them and kill them. Widow's family are really very poor and they are struggling for their livelihood.
In addition, tigers don't find enough prey, which forces them to leave their forest cover and look for food in open areas of human habitation. Kajal Rai, an agricultural hand who has lived in the village for 20 years, is also aware of the dangers in the Sundarbans.
Both the extreme weather and the tiger is a big problem here. Whenever we get to know of the activities of a tiger moving in this area, we inform the authorities. But even then, there are a lot of incidents that happen.
Ecologists say that sea level rise and coastal erosion are also shrinking the tiger's ranges. The Sundarbans consist of low-lying swamps dotted with hundreds of small islands crisscrossed by water channels. Already, it has lost a good part of the tiger habitat due to global warming over the last four decades, scientists found. Providing the habitat for nearly 500 tigers, the Sundarbans is also home to more than 50 reptile species, 120 commercial fish species, 300 bird species, and 45 mammal species. While their exact number are unclear, the tigers living in the Sundarbans of India and Bangladesh may represent as many as 10% of all the remaining wild tigers worldwide. Mukit Majumdar Babu, a wildlife enthusiast from Dhaka, says curbing tourism could help the tigers recover.
To protect tigers, we should not allow the tourists to go inside the Sundarban, because in Bangladesh there is no restriction about tourism. I believe that if we can do this kind of thing, like if we control the tourism and ecotourism we introduce, and we put barrier in Sundarban, like the Indian side, I think we can protect tigers better than the way we are doing it right now.
Shahab Inam Khan, a research director at the Bangladesh Enterprise Institute, who's chronicled the Sundarbans closely, says providing alternate livelihoods for people could be an answer.
Tiger population is so delicate at the moment. We have to provide impetus for the livelihoods or for the people living in the forest areas so that they can actually integrate themselves into the mainstream economy, so that the pressure on the Sundarban forest gets lower.
The Sundarban forests have taken the brunt of several devastating cyclones and weather upheavals. New satellite studies show that more than 70% of the forest coastline is retreating by as much as 200 meters or 656 feet a year. If erosion continues at this pace, the already threatened tiger populations living in the forest will be put further at risk. Sanjay Gupta, a senior consultant at the World Bank, feels the Bangladeshi and Indian authorities should join forces and work out an urgent action plan.
I think there is a lot of things that could be done. One is to start reducing the impact of human activities on the Sundarbans landscape. The other is to start actually creating more mangrove forests, perhaps mangrove replantation, etc. The third is to look at joining hands between the two countries for at least coordinated management of the Sundarbans forests.
Forestry officials and the Wildlife Trust of Bangladesh say there are an estimated 60 to 80 people killed every year by tiger attacks. But what is certain is that the gradual degradation of the Sundarban ecosystem is having a serious impact on the tiger population. The mangrove forest of the Bengal tiger now joins the sea ice of the polar bear as one of the habitats most immediately threatened as global temperatures rise during the course of this century. Murali Krishnan, DW, Sundarbans.
The Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, is home to hundreds of endangered mountain gorillas. It's one of the most biologically diverse protected areas on the planet. But it's also rich in oil, and in order to get to that oil, the government wants to shift the boundaries of the park. The park is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and the UNESCO has said the exploration and extraction of oil was incompatible with its protected status, thus the attempt at shifting borders. Bettina Rühl went to the Virunga National Park, and Sonia Dean presents her report.
Dodie the dog sinks his nose into a blue freezer bag and takes a whiff of the plastic bottle inside. Dog handler Christian Chamavou gives the animal a few seconds to process the smell.
Chash.
Very good.
Chash is French for find it, and Dodie is off. Christian Chamavou and Dodie are training to track down people in the Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The nature reserve on the border with Rwanda is best known for its volcanoes and mountain gorillas. It's the job of Chamavou and his 270 fellow rangers to protect Virunga's plants and animals. But it's risky, says Shamavu.
C'est déjà 20 ans que nous sommes dans la période de guerre.
For 20 years, we have been at war here in eastern DRC.
They are always buying the more tragedy on the path because of these militias. Our job is not easy.
Oh, vraiment, on est débordés. Et c'est pas facile.
Over the last 20 years, more than 140 rangers have been killed on duty in Virunga National Park.
I believe it's the greatest number of losses for any national park anywhere in the world.
Demerode is director of Virunga National Park. At the beginning of June, he too was almost assassinated. As an uncompromising conservationist, Demerode has made plenty of enemies. He's also a well-known critic of oil extraction. British oil company Soco International wants to extract oil within the park's boundaries, with a license from the Congolese government.
It's a huge concern for us. It's a very worrying development. You know, our role is to uphold the law, and if any activity, including oil, is developed in a way that could be considered illegal, then we're obliged to prevent it from happening. So that puts us under enormous strain.
Demerode is employed by the very government he's criticizing over these oil extraction plans. The oil reserves lie under Lake Edward. If the viscous black liquid gets into the water, a clutch of gold fishing plants that will be at risk. It could have the present threat to as many as 50,000 families whose livelihood depends on fishing. Environmentalists warn that other areas of the national park will also be at risk if the extraction goes ahead. The risk of oil leaks are high as oil will be transported via a pipeline. The pipeline could be damaged by fights with armed rebels, or even deliberately demolished by rebels to put pressure on the government. They could also be illegally tapped and then left to leak into the pristine environment. Environmental scientist Jacques Licou believes the risks are too great to be justified.
The Congolese government is trying to prove that the oil can be extracted without any great environmental risks. But scientifically speaking, it has to be said that such activities are always extremely risky for biodiversity.
The animals and plants in Virunga are especially unique, according to UNESCO, which declared the national park a World Heritage Site in 1979. The park is famous for its mountain gorillas, which are already threatened with extinction. Oil exploration could put these animals further at risk. But the Congolese government has a trick up its sleeve to silence protests. It plans to change the borders of the park so that the oil reserves lie outside of its boundaries. Guy Biyama works for the DRC government's Environment Protection Agency. He won't tolerate meddling from international environments or the United Nations. He says the Congolese government has the right to do with its national parks what it thinks is best.
It is the government that created the national parks in the first place. If the government is later satisfied that conservation and oil extraction can go together, what's the problem?
Le problème, il est où?
Back at the dog training session, Dodi has tracked down the supposed culprit and is rewarded with lavish praise and a little treat.
Wow!
The tracker dogs will keep working to track down poachers and other criminals. But they're not able to catch the masterminds who are behind the scenes pulling the strings.
That report by Bettina Rühl was presented by Sonja Dean. Now, loss of habitat is also an issue in Turkey's largest city, Istanbul. It's where wild boars have turned up. Some have even tried to swim across the Bosphorus, apparently in an effort to avoid construction in the region. This month, a group of boars stormed the garden of a housing complex, scaring residents and a security guard there. Earlier, I spoke to WWF Turkey's conservation officer, Selin Devanoğlu. I started by asking her why wild boars have started appearing in the city.
So according to the expert's opinion, the wildlife expert's opinion, it's due to habitat fragmentation mainly. We know that wild boars coming into the cities has been an increasing trend, and so has been the development and human influence in the northern forests of Istanbul. So the general opinion is that this is due to habitat fragmentation because of human activities in the area.
And how many wild boars have emerged in Istanbul so far? Can you give an estimate?
We don't have a definite number, but we definitely know that the number has been increasing. So last year and this year has been much more than the past years, and it's not that it hasn't happened in the past, but earlier on you would see this happen in once in 10 years or so. Now it's become more common in the last 2 years.
Earlier you said this is essentially something that is man-made, and I believe the wild boars try to flee construction near the city's northern forests, where a third Bosporus bridge and an airport are being built. Is that the reason why they try to sort of get into the city?
Yes, that's our guess, but unfortunately there are no, you know, scientific studies done on this and no actual monitoring going on. So in order to give a definite answer, or at least close to a definite answer, we have to have a monitoring system, and we don't have that. But we've talked to many experts, in-house experts, and the general opinion is that, yes, this is because of human activities.
And are other animals affected by these construction projects as well? Do other animals also show up in people's gardens?
The other animals are definitely affected as well. But because there are, I guess, more wild boars, and because of their living systems, the way they live in packs, and also the way their system is, living system is, it's more likely that we see the boars, wild boars, coming into the cities. And they're also more adaptable to the cities, or less afraid of coming in, so that's why we see them. Once the young males come to a certain age, they are thrown out of these packs to find new territories for themselves. So you see these boars, wild boars, come into the cities, especially during the mating season, once they are thrown out of their packs, because the habitat is fragmented, they actually have less and smaller places to go to, and then they end up in the cities.
And now, especially the construction of a third bridge over the Bosporus has been hit with hefty criticism, and forest land was cleared for highways leading up to that bridge. Is there the risk that these projects will destroy Istanbul's northern forests irreversibly?
Yes, for sure. They will have a big and irreversible impact. One important thing to note here is Istanbul's forests are not just any forest. First of all, it's one of the 9 biodiversity hotspot forests in Turkey. This makes Istanbul forests very valuable, the high biodiversity. These forests are cleaning the water for millions of people, cleaning the air for millions of people. They are also storing carbon for, you know, the whole world. Any fragmentation and any development that hurts these forests are irreversible, yes, and also very harming to all these people, and also the biodiversity that it entails.
And it was a big chunk of forest that has been cleared, right? I mean, I saw a picture of one, well, what's supposed to become a street, I think, eventually, and like left and right of it, it was just all cleared in the middle of a forest.
I visited the area and also observed huge clearing, but personally I'm not a construction expert either, so I'm not sure how much is actually needed for this road. But it led to an untrained big destruction of the forest. Also, there has been a rerouting of the road. So the initial clearing was done incorrectly, so there was another clearing following that. So there was that was problematic. And also, another thing to add is that it's not just this road and the clearing that is done for the construction of the actual road that we are worried about, but what we expect as the following increase in development in the area.
Now, one can argue that these construction projects are needed for Turkey's development. Have there been any plans to incorporate environmental concerns at all?
Yes, that's what we hear will be eco-paths. So bridges have the animals on the road, on this highway. That's in the plan. Other than that, I'm not aware of any other environmental precautions that are integrated. Well, yes, for the new cities plan to be developed in the north of Istanbul, the name eco-cities is also given, so they are likely to, I'm not sure if these are official, but they're likely to be eco-cities with more renewable energy perhaps, or more efficient buildings, which is of course good, but nothing can replace an old-growth natural forest.
Istanbul wants to become the European Green Capital of 2017, a title given to cities with a green vision. What do you think Istanbul should do in order to truly deserve that title?
In order for Istanbul to really deserve the title, it definitely needs to manage its nature conservation practices better. This valuable forest needs to be protected from development, first of all. And even though, you know, you can say that the city needs development, and according to Istanbul's metropolitan plan, the development is supposed to happen on the east and west axis of the Istanbul, and the north is supposed to be protected, conserved as an important ecosystem service provider. So it's not that the keeping the forests are against development, but it is important for having a healthy development and also one that we can sustain in the long term.
Selin Divanoğlu of WWF Turkey there. The Hurenor Danube salmon was once widespread throughout the Danube basin, but the king of fish, as it's sometimes called, has been left high and dry. Its natural habitat is shrinking as rivers are channeled for shipping and dammed for hydroelectricity. Carrie Skyring reports from the banks of the Sava River in Slovenia.
Big one.
It sounds like they're catching fish, but they're not. From a plastic bucket, they're taking half a dozen hukin and freeing them into the cool, clear waters of the Sava River near the Slovene capital, Ljubljana. The sleek fish remain in the shallow water for a few seconds, their blue and brown colors merging with the river stones. Then they flash away into the mainstream. Dr. Stephen Weiss, a marine species specialist at Graz University, is the author of a new study on the hukin and its habitat.
Steve, how old are those hukin?
Those are about 3 years old. They're immature still. They have to get quite a bit larger to be mature, about 60, 70 centimeters. Those are about 40 centimeters.
There are stories of them growing to 60 kilograms. I mean, is that correct?
Well, that's out of several newspaper articles from Austria in the late 19th century, but we can't really verify that. Nowadays, there are some examples of stuffed specimens that are estimated about 30 to 35 kilograms.
I should point out that the noise that we've got in the background is a very fast flowing Sava River. Just tell me why this river is important to the survival of the hukin.
The Sava and its tributaries are the second largest system in the whole Balkans, for which there are self-sustaining populations of hukin. So the second largest habitat as a system in the entire Balkans.
Stephen Weiss's study shows the hukin, sometimes called the Danube salmon, now exists in only 10% of the streams in which it once swam. Ulrich Eichelmann from Riverwatch, the international NGO campaigning for river preservation, is also here to see the hukin swim off into the Sava.
Because we want that people see actually a fish, the hukin, because very, very few people have really seen a live hukin. Mostly we know fish from the supermarket, and we want to show what the hukin is all about. And we, you know, they're like ambassadors for us, and we hope that they, you know, have a free future here.
What could get in the way of their future?
Well, there are so many dams planned in this region. On the Sava, there's 10 dams or hydroelectric power plants planned in the region of the hukin. And it's either or. It's either hukin or dams. So these are our colleagues fighting dams, actually.
A barge negotiates a lock on the Danube near Vienna. It's navigating past one of the many dams producing renewable energy from hydropower. Austria is proud of this clean energy. And according to Erwin Meyer, who heads an industry lobby group, the Austrian Small Hydropower Association, dams can coexist with a healthy fish population.
We have the Waterfinder Directive in Europe, and it's also implemented, of course, in Austria. And we have relatively strong regimes to ensure that the fish migration is perfect in Austria, I would say, in all rivers. And a lot of small hydropower plants in the meantime have already been improved and have fish passes. And therefore the fish migration, I would say, is not really a problem in Austria.
Okay, thank you for the invitation.
At a press conference in Ljubljana to present his Hukan habitat study, Stephen Weiss disagrees.
The migration fish ladder issue is actually a minor issue. You still destroy the habitat and there's still tremendous impacts on the Hukan and other species, regardless of what kind of fish pass facilities are built. And my experience is, at least at the moment in Central Europe, that they simply want to build every single possible dam they can, and with an almost kind of guerrilla tactic simultaneously all over the region.
Nice boots.
Among the group gathered on the banks of the Sava is Miroslav Zabel, president of the Fishing Association of Slovenia. With around 12,000 members, he's casting his lot in with the environmentalists and hoping to convince the government that the dams should not be built in areas where the Hukan spawns.
The Hukan in Slovenia is the king of fish. It's the most important fish for fishermen or fisherwomen in Slovenia. We have a very strictly regulation about fishing for Hukan. In every fishing club can catch only 5 to 10 pieces.
Slovenia's campaign to save the Hukan and stop the dams hopes European legislation will come to their aid. As an EU member, it has signed up to the European Water Directive. According to Stephen Weiss, that means no dams in environmentally sensitive areas.
Countries, member states, should not be degrading the ecological quality of their rivers. There are exemption clauses that are allowed for projects that are considered to be in the overwhelming public interest. But in general, we shouldn't be destroying whole river systems at all anymore under this legislation.
The Sava River has over 300 kilometers of Hukan habitat, making it the second most important system for this big fish, next to the Drina, which flows through Serbia and Bosnia. But with hundreds of dams planned for these rivers, Ulrich Eichelmann is arguing it's time to stop repeating the mistakes which have led to the near extinction of the Hukan in much of the Danube Basin.
The rivers are destroyed. They're regulated mostly to more than 90% in our areas. And so we have no idea. But when you want to see wild river, you've got to go to the Balkans. And I am very convinced that more and more people at least want to make holidays in something that they don't have at home. So experience a river however you can. And that brings, in the end, money to the locals.
River Watch and their Save the Hukan campaigners say they're not against all dams, but in the face of the massive dam-building plans in the Balkans, they're calling for a master plan, one which protects the Hukan and its habitat. Kerry Skyring, DW, on the Sava River in Slovenia.
And that report wraps up this edition of Living Planet. You can listen to this and past editions again. Just go to dw.de/livingplanet. We're also up on SoundCloud, and our Twitter handle is dw_echo. Living Planet was produced by me, Sarah Steffen. Our studio director was Iliane Gildaducci, and our studio tech was Gerd Georgi. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're back next week with a new edition of Living Planet. Bye for now.